Away we go here in a midweek Wednesday morning right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this 27th day of October 2021. JR Simmer and Hammer with you. And you're waking up to, well, it was supposed to be a mix of sun and clouds today. And tomorrow was supposed to be nice and Friday was supposed to be nice. And every day seemingly changes a little bit. Anyway, for today, looks like it's going to be pretty good. We'll call it a mostly sunny day. I find the various weather prognostications, be it Weather Network, be it Environment Canada, be it the weather app on my phone, they're all kind of all over the place on the weather today. So it's going to be everything from mostly sunny to mostly cloudy. So that's why I'm going with mix of sun and clouds. Huh? Split the middle. High today of 12 degrees. Tomorrow, which we says on one app, is going to be mostly sunny. Environment Canada says mostly cloudy. So we're going to go with a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow and a high of 9 degrees. Everybody agrees that Friday is going to be nice. Sunshine and 13, and then showers and a bit cooler predicted for the weekend. And of course, this Sunday is Halloween after a no Halloween 2020. Kids will be back out. Potentially looks like it might be a little bit wet. We'll keep our eye on that for you. But as we said, 12 degrees for the high today. As we wake up this morning, we're sitting at 7. And as we say good morning and hello to Sean Simpson. How are you this morning, Simmer?
Excellent, JR. And back watching the United States news, a little better than what they're having. It's a little nor'easter to the east, of course. It's a little tornado season down the alley.
Yes.
And it's some type of bomb out in the west. And I don't know exactly.
A weather bomb?
A weather bomb or something.
Is it a Colorado low, though? No. We always learn in Canada, yeah. Beware the Colorado low.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that term. Oh, it's just the way they love to build up anything that's going on in the
millions
United States.
In the path of killer storms.
It's 85 million, JR, yeah. And that's really basically just the east coast of the United States, right? That's between Boston and D.C., that's all you're saying. So, yeah, they love to hype up their weather, and yeah, I'll take it. And I'm thinking on Friday, boys, setting the table here.
Yep.
Heading after the show to Montreal, 8 p.m., Joe Beef, so beautiful weather in Montreal as well. So I'm going to be enjoying that, and I'm going to trace.
Dirty weekend in Montreal?
Well, what does that mean?
Just a dirty weekend.
Well, like, come on.
What does that come on to mean?
Ew, dirty. Yeah, real dirty.
Hello.
Yeah, no, going to be a nice little getaway and going to retrace what I'm doing here, we are doing here between now and then at Christmas time. We're going to retrace all the places that Anthony Bourdain went to when he was in Montreal and also in Quebec City.
Between now, are you taking the next 2 months off to do this? Well, are you like a young Jacques Cartier?
It's a two-parter. Oh. Yeah, we're going to canoe. We're going to do the canoe down the Ottawa.
Yeah. Well,
so a few days, a weekend in Montreal, and then over Christmas, going to head to Quebec City
and
eat at the Continental. That's the big one. So like I said, I've watched that show so many darn times, and that episode when he visited Montreal / Quebec, that, hey, want to get in and try some of these places for the late, great Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, Joe Beef, famous.
Yeah.
I must admit, I only know it through my wife, who probably is like you, just seems to know these places, and as forever wanted to go dine there, and so she has. She's on Open Table, which for if you want to book a spot in a restaurant that's normally fully booked all the time, they'll just kind of let you know. But it's last minute. Hey, a table opened up. Would you like to come? She hit me with this. Would be sometime a couple of months ago, on a Wednesday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. There's an opening at Joe Beef at 7 o'clock tonight. Can we go? It was a school night. It was 2 hours away.
I
had to break her heart and say, well, you can go with someone else.
Guys, and I'll say this. Like, even when we went to Belleville for that bus trip, if I go to Kinks and I go to Montreal, I don't have any interest in going to Montreal and coming back. If I'm going to Montreal, I'm not saying it's a crazy trip, and back when you scouted, you'd probably drive there and back, JR, but I want to go there and enjoy it. I want to end up staying overnight. And the Joe Beef, what's interesting about that, I did the same thing. I went on, and I was trying for about 2 weeks. Finally, I went on the website. I called the restaurant. I left my name and number. The girl calls me back an hour later, said, we've got lots of openings for Friday. I was like, okay. it was kind of it was kind of comedic that, again, I tried the same thing. It's always, nothing there. The other one that's famous that they own is a Liverpool house, right? And that's where Obama and Trudeau had their famous get-together a few years ago. So they're all kind of linked and, I guess, a little bit on the trendy side, but be fun to try.
There you go. All right. Do you know what you're going to be fine dining in? Going for, hang on, the beef? Joe Beef?
You know what? That's so funny.
Don't you get the fish there?
Well, yeah, I have no idea. Like,
kind of like when you go to a restaurant and the sign outside says specializing in Canadian and Chinese cuisine.
Yeah.
It's one or the other, folks.
Well,
one or the other.
That means it's not good at either.
No, but that's my old boss. My old boss, Jack Button, used to say, hey, when you're on the prairies, you have steak. When you're out in the Maritimes, you have fish.
It's yes.
Pretty simple here. You go with what is basically going to be the freshest darn thing. Now, as far as Joe Beef, as strangely as it's called Joe Beef, I mean, I think that they're all over the place here, right?
And
you know, I don't really get I didn't get the sense that this is like it's not a steakhouse. That's at least I don't think it is. You know what I mean? But whatever the name came from the two partners that are there.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, it sounds good.
Yeah.
Gonna be maybe a nice bottle of wine with this this dirty meal.
Yeah, maybe end up having that. You can end up doing that.
Maybe even some late night dancing.
Well, the disco. Go up to
Hello Crescent Street.
Yeah, no, I don't. I've aged out of that whole Crescent Street thing.
Have you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I have for sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Nice hotel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We usually stay at the Nelligan in Old Montreal,
Nelly.
Which is a nice little a nice little treat. And also, Echo the Dog is making the trip, which is nice. We did a little Westin thing, and it's nice. The Westin here in Ottawa is dog friendly. Most of the Marriott properties now are, so we're actually going to stay in a Marriott just so Echo can make the trip because she's never been to Montreal.
Is she going to Joe Beef as well?
You know, that's a good question.
Little sidecar because, there down
because,
the bottom
because they're pretty friendly in Quebec with the dogs, right? Hey.
They are.
Okay. In Europe, you could
I know in Paris, they
Oh,
are.
In Europe, you could take your dog anywhere. Like, the dog literally comes where most of the Canadian places that are dog-friendly.
Right in the restaurant?
You got to sit on the path. Oh, very much Hammer. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. It's a whole different mentality. You go anywhere with your dog. We have strange kind of restrictions, and I'm a little surprised. Like, I actually took Echo to the hockey rink. Most people don't realize that, and Echo loves hockey. You know, that people don't realize there's a lot of places you can take your dog. You can take the dog to the mall. I love strolling through the mall and getting the reaction. Echo loves the escalators too. That's always it's a great reaction when the poor dog don't go.
I can't even ride an escalator that well. I always look, the thing freaks me out when I look at
it. It freaks her out. Of course. I mean, I think going down wasn't as bad as I had to literally, you could hear the scraping of her nails as she's being pulled onto the escalators. It's going up. So good experience.
Do you know what you're going to be throwing down when you go to Joe Beef for dinner?
Are you looking at the menu right now,
Hammer? I'm looking at the menu right now.
No, Hammer, I was told.
And I'm going to say, to be quite honest with you, I'm a little surprised at how reasonable it is considering how popular it is.
Yeah, because there's another, Moishas is another steakhouse there, and there's a really fancy Greek restaurant we went to a couple of years ago. And I just, you know, I was prepared for this one. I knew it was going to be ridiculously expensive, so you just kind of bite the bullet. I hate that feeling when I'm there because I'm not the Joe Big Spender.
Just my pockets.
Well, I always do a calculation in my head. As soon as things start getting ordered, I'm like, well, that's 40, and then that's 40, and that's 30, and then if we have about a bottle of wine, then the tax is on top, and you start going through it.
Can you bring your own wine to Joe B?
Well,
You do that to a lot of the Greek places on Prince Arthur.
Well, and you can do that, Prince Arthur a street chair?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of the Greek places are, if I remember.
But Old Montreal has always been famous for that, right?
Yes.
You know, they have the corking.
I'm not sure if all of them are.
Well, they have a corking fee, right? I think usually the term they end up using, which in Canada, boy, that's a pretty big advantage. So what am I thinking here, Hammer? What should I go with?
Well, the main steak, which is called the Joe Beef Steak, you'll be dropping $50 for that.
Okay,
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Surprisingly reasonable.
Now, we always split the main. We always split the main course.
What?
Yeah.
One of those couples.
What are you, Lady and the Tramp in this dinner or something?
Here's my plate. Can I have yours back?
You guys
took more than half.
You guys are going to make me puke.
No.
Kidding.
What you do is...
brutal. You guys may not be married. I mean, none of that sharing in my relationship.
Don't look at me. Don't talk to me. I'm eating.
Exactly. Bingo.
No, we usually go through a few. First of all, we have to sit at the bar. That's our favorite thing. So we're sitting at the bar. And then I'm going to go with is there a nice little steak tartare there? Or a little beef carpaccio? See, that's kind of my go-to when it comes to appetizers.
I bet you there is.
Yeah.
The menu here is in French.
I'm a big Caesar salad guy. So you could always go with
The Joe Beef salad is $13.
Okay.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
That's a garden salad or is that
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's just a garden salad. The fries are $8. If you just want a fry and a pickle.
A little frite.
That's $10 right there.
Yeah, but let's, pickle. No disrespect to anybody listening, but the French people do their French fries outstanding, JR. Would you agree?
Yes.
When you go to Montreal,
the frites.
I don't care where you're at. Yep. The French fry is always
There's
coming
nothing
out.
Nothing from frozen.
No. It always, like the
anything from frozen really sucks. Yeah, I mean, really, it's just about saving time. You have it at your house, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know what you're dealing with. Yeah. But you go to a restaurant, don't give me frozen garbage.
No.
Give me some fresh cut. I want to see the potato skin on the ends of those fries.
Exactly. I want, when I go into the poutine shop, like you would normally see, I want the bags of potatoes right in front of you. And any of the little brasseries you go to there, though, right? All you do is order a little bit of French fries, maybe a chanchot, and you're just like, wow, toasted bun.
A little street dog action.
Oh, yeah.
Try and break my Montreal weekend record of 47 hot dogs eaten on one Montreal weekend. It was not a dirty weekend. It was a weekend with the guys.
It's way too early for talk about that, man. We're talking food.
Are you staying Saturday as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because here's a recommendation for Gibby's.
Okay.
Gibby's in Old Montreal is fantastic.
Yeah, I have been to Gibby's, so that's a good spot. And yeah, there's all kinds of neat. Well, hey, it's Montreal, so like I say, fine. And I will say that from an Ottawa perspective, we've come a long ways in the restaurant area as well. Lots of good places here in Ottawa.
Hammer, prepare for Simmer Mail It In Friday on steroids, I believe.
It won't. He's not on steroids on Friday.
No, the whole thing
he's
there.
Mail It In Friday steroids.
No, because when you're pumped up for something, JR, you actually do even better. Like, there's no...
Do you?
Oh, God, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, do you?
I was thinking with a dirty weekend, he's going to be on something else.
I'll try a little bit of this.
Be walking around with a high towel.
Little potion. Little magic potion. All right, 6:21. We got lots to get to. Sens did not play or practice yesterday, but lots of hockey news and lots of late-night hockey games that maybe you're waking up and you're going, what went on, for instance, with Montreal in Seattle? We'll tell you all about that. And, of course, talk thoroughly about the Chicago Blackhawks situation as well, because that certainly dominated the headlines yesterday. So we'll chat all about that throughout the course of the morning. Love your reaction to it as well. And we'll also get to the World Series, which began last night. Braves beat the Astros in Game 1, and we had some kind of incredible performance from Braves starting pitcher Charlie Morton, which we'll detail as well. So we got to all of that. We'll get into some football as well. CFL trade deadline is today. Red Blacks don't have a general manager, or at least a full-time guy anymore. They have an interim GM. Do you make a trade when a guy's been on the job officially for 2 days? Anyway, we'll chat about that. Of course, get you set for the NFL week ahead, including the Thursday Nighter. Should be a great game. Packers 6-1, Cards 7-0. That goes tomorrow night. No Devontae Adams ruled out now with COVID for the Packers. So we got lots to get to, lots of winning, our $1,000 minute, our King of the Grill contest. Speaking of beef, down to your last 3 days to qualify, get your name on the list to win that beautiful Traeger grill, courtesy of Capital Barbecue. So we got all that on the way. Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey insider, will join us. And it is, for the first time with us at least, a Belleville Senators game day. We got the game tonight versus Rochester. We'll talk to play-by-play voice Jack Miller coming up after 9 o'clock this morning. So a busy show ahead. We're glad you're with us here for a Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 6:26 here on a Wednesday morning. JR, Simmer, and Hammer. A couple quick texts at 12-1200. A reminder, when you do text us, that standard messaging rates may apply. Remember $2 Expo games with $1 hot dogs. So good, but so dirty. That's from Dave in the Prior. Not sure you're getting $2 baseball games and $1 hot dogs this weekend in Montreal.
I didn't look at the old board, JR, but that was one of the big topics with the Kraken Open the other night, was how outrageous the concession prices were.
Oh, were they?
And I thought to myself, I don't know how much higher you can go to make it outrageous. I thought they were already at that level, and usually in the United States, not the case, but yeah, I guess they were charging quite a bit.
Tim in Eganville, our friend, Caesar salad, wait till they make that table side at the Continental. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Sounds like voice of experience there, Simmer.
No, Timmy was just there about a month ago. I also talked to Leslie Roberts downstairs. He and Bill Carroll have been there. His wife Sylvie is from there. And like I say, you have your classic maitre d'. And if you ever watch the episode, you basically go through, and this is what Anthony Bourdain at the time is talking about. He's with the two Joe Beef guys who took the train from Montreal to Quebec. But it's just old culinary extraordinary things that you really would never hear about, right? And they're making stuff at the table for you. And they make, have you had that, the tableside Caesar salad, Jer?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right?
And you know, I'm okay if you make it behind, as long as it's good. I don't really care where it's
made.
But
would you agree that it's much better when it's the kind of oil base with the egg in it and all mixed versus a mayonnaise
base? I will agree that there is a good Caesar salad and then there's terrible Caesar salad. Well, and I usually measure how much I like a restaurant, because I like Caesar salad like you do.
Okay.
By how good their Caesar salad is. Because a lot of places, they just oversaturate it, right? Oh, we're just going to throw extra stuff on here and it's wet and it's gross.
No, and then the other one is just when it's a real thick mayonnaise base and that's all you're tasting. Not liking that at all. I like it with the traditional, and you have a bit of egg in there. There's obviously some cheese, kind of a mix, and then just
anchovy
just
paste.
A little ant. Oh, man, Hammer, exactly. Yes, good call by you, right?
It's restaurant quality.
Thank you, Gordon Ramsay.
No, that just that little subtle smell and flavor of a little bit of anchovy. Mm. Oh my, jumping the right little bit of lettuce, a little squeeze of lemon on top, and I don't want the lettuce in big pieces. I want it smaller, you know, delicately done,
like almost chopped.
Exactly.
How are you feeling about a crouton?
No, I don't need it.
Yeah, no, I don't mind it. You know,
big crouton, small crouton.
You know, a little bacon bits became a big thing there in 1980. I don't mind a little bacon bit action. Regular bacon.
We're not going to Ponderosa salad bar here. Yeah. All right, we want some real bacon.
The one that came out of the little thing there, the amount of salt in there, you could leave that for probably 100 years.
Bacon, it would still flavoring. Be good to go. Yeah.
Sorry for making everybody so hungry at 6:30 in the morning. Yeah.
Well, they're
hungry.
Eating. Way to go. We're not.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, let's get to the World Series. We'll get to the hockey in just a second. Montreal played out in Seattle last night. You can imagine how that turned out. Not. But we'll start with the World Series, which began with a bang for the visiting Braves.
And now the 2-0 and a swing and a ball hit to deep left field, and Atlanta strikes early. Soler lines a rocket into the Crawford boxes. And three pitches into game one of the World Series, the Braves have a 1-0 lead.
They would add a second run in that top of the first inning. And really, the game, in my opinion, kind of decided in that first inning. Braves get the lead. Houston loads the bases in the bottom of the first inning. And sharp ground ball. Looks like it could have got through. Beautiful play by Ozzie Albies, the second baseman by the Braves. Little pick, little throw. And snuffs out that Astros rally, and from there the Braves would add another three runs early on. They were up 5-0 and cruise to what eventually would be a 6-2 game one win as the visitors in Houston. So Atlanta up 1-0. The story of the game, though, was Atlanta's starting pitcher, Charlie Morton. We're going to take you now to the second inning, all right? So this is early on in the game, and this is the one people are talking about.
Strike three called on the curve.
Buckled again. Charlie gets that curveball for a strike, and the trainer comes out right now as Charlie and the trainer have a conversation, Dan.
He landed a little bit awkwardly. I think he lost his balance or might have stuck a cleat. And boy, Charlie Morton is walking off the field.
Yeah. All right. So let's fill in the backstory. And sorry, that was actually in the third inning. What happened in the second inning was that Charlie Morton got hit by a comebacker to the right leg that was measured at 102 miles an hour. Went right off his right leg. He was able to shake it off, I guess, because he stayed in and threw 10 more pitches in that inning and then started the third inning. Finishing with that strikeout you heard right there, six more pitches. He threw 16 pitches after taking that comebacker off the leg, exited the game, and an hour later, the Braves announced, oh, he's got a fractured leg, and he's out for the rest of the series. He pitched, and that was on his right leg. He's a right-hander, would be his push-off leg. So he threw 16 pitches, pushing off a broken leg. Anyway, what a story. That'll be one for the ages, especially the Braves go on to win, that they'll be telling. An amazing story for Charlie Morton. And, the Braves make it through. They get the bullpen out there and serve out the game and win it 6-2.
Yeah, a little stress fracture there, JR, and pretty incredible and also pretty historical. I know it was a nice call but that's the first time in the history of the World Series that a leadoff batter on the first at bat has hit a home run, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That, so that is the first time in Major League Baseball history.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't kind of touch on that. I mean, you know, I just said,
took them a long time to get to that, too.
An early lead. I'm like, well, that's pretty historic, right? So that's my stat for the day, JR, and that's what I'm bringing to the baseball chat.
Oh, okay. All right. Good.
That's it.
Yeah. Zimmer Watch Sports Center this morning.
No, I did. Exactly.
Dusty Baker, the Astros manager, after the game, talking about his team's ability to bounce back.
Well, our team doesn't worry, and our team's very confident, and we, you know, have the knack of bouncing back after tough losses because they don't quit, they don't give up, they don't get down, you know, and that's the secret of sports. You have to forget yesterday. You know, that's one of the keys. This team is excellent at forgetting yesterday if you had negative events like we did today. You go in our clubhouse, I've never seen these guys worry. You know they can play, and they know that they're going to rebound.
All right. Well, I'm not here to doubt the ability to bounce back because I pronounced the Astros. Well, I didn't pronounce the Astros dead. I said that the Red Sox were a team of destiny after they won Game 3 of the ALCS over Houston. And we're up 2-1. I was like, well, this series is essentially over. And we all know that Houston won 3 games in a row.
Yeah.
So I'm not here to pronounce last rites on the Houston Astros only being down 1 game tonight.
And Dusty's a likable fella, but nobody likes you. Nobody likes the Astros, JR. So when you hear people talk and nobody outside of Houston wants to hear about your resolve or you're coming back because nobody wants to see it happen. They want to see you go down 4 straight to the Braves and just go home. That's all they really want.
Okay, I'm not a guy that usually pays a whole lot of attention to the commentary during a sporting event. It usually just becomes white noise to me. And
because
I don't,
you think you're smarter than the commentators.
No, not at all.
In one of those baseball
stars.
I do it with hockey, too. Yeah, but he also wears his manager's uniform when he's watching.
Really?
Yeah.
And pants?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pants?
Yeah, he's got it all. He's got a big chew
in. I got the Robbie Ray pants on. They are two sizes too small.
Tight and tighter.
Oh, yes, sir.
Dan says, can you dance on the table between innings?
But I am going to have to toss a little mouchoir to John Schmoltz because
I love John Schmoltz.
I know you do, and he does an excellent job.
He's an anti-vaxxer.
Is he really?
Yes.
Oh, well,
anyway.
It doesn't matter. When it comes to the baseball commentary, when he's talking about the pitchers, it's excellent. But when he starts talking about hitting, let's just say it's all no duh, Schmoltz. When he talks about how the Braves are attacking the high fastball and trying to launch it in the air.
Mm.
I don't know any hitters that attack a high fastball and try to hit it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. I don't need to know
but
that.
I wouldn't have known that, Hammer. No, I mean that's
a high pitch you're going to try to knock into the ground.
I know what you're saying is obvious, but I wouldn't have known until you explain it. That's all. Because I totally understand watching hockey and there's things that are said, but there's no doubt if I was watching the baseball, I'd be like, oh, okay, that name. I would say it makes sense.
I would agree to Simmer to a certain extent because I was actually, when he said that, now that you brought that up, I remember that I was actually watching.
Yeah.
That part of it when he said that. And it wasn't so much of, duh, of course you try and hit a... It's that they're waiting because it's a low ball pitcher. They're waiting for the high ones because those are the ones they feel they can attack. I think that was his point. Maybe just wasn't stated like baseball aficionados would like it.
Yeah, well, it's just the fact that he underlined it by saying they're trying to attack that ball and launch it in the air. That's the issue that I had with.
You're a snob.
Hammer would be on the horn to TBS or whoever's broadcasting into their broadcast
center. Give me Joe Buck. Put me through to Smoltz.
That was what they did like 40 years ago, right? People would call into the actual station. Right?
Really?
So anyway,
they did that in golf.
It's interesting you because one of the things I think about last night, I was going to bring it up on the air, but now that you have. I was thinking about my favorite sports color commentators that I really like because I feel like when I listen to them, I learn things.
Yeah.
And I will say for baseball, for me, it's John Smoltz. I really like John Smoltz. Yeah. And I'm not as huge a baseball fan as you are. I know the sport. I've watched it forever. But when I listen and I watch a game and I listen to him, there is the odd thing that he's going to say where I go, that's really interesting. I didn't know that or I didn't think of that or whatever. So for me, I think John Smoltz is state-of-the-art, the best color commentator in baseball.
And it's funny, Jared, when you go through that, the two that come to mind, and then the most recent, of course, is Tony Romo. And it's also funny because when last week when Troy Aikman was on, he's actually guessing the plays now, which I thought is some pressure on him. My favorite, hands down, outside of hockey, was always Johnny Miller. I loved listening to him do golf. And I know for a lot of people, they did not like him at all. I found
because because golf is very much a everybody's for everybody. Yeah. Johnny Miller was the first guy to call it as he sees it. He's the first guy to say, that was a bad shot. It wasn't, ooh, the wind pushed that one. He wasn't expecting that. You know, that's what made Johnny Miller great.
And
until he became bitter.
I guess he also joined in at the time of Tiger when Tiger started, right? So you were along for the ride for that, and at least it felt like he was around for a lot of the great moments, and he just felt so relatable, so confident. And I also thought it was cool, guys. He was about 15 years into his broadcasting career, and everyone's giving him crap. And remember, he hopped into the one tour event and won a chair at whatever age. I thought, pretty good there when you can hop in at over 40, and they're saying, "Oh, well, you get out and do it," and he ended up winning the tournament. That wasn't too bad.
The one thing that Smoltz did say last night, and I just say, when it comes to pitching, he's got a ton of insight. And when he's talking
more
about
than you,
when Charlie Morton is struggling in the first inning and he's walking batters and he's having a hard time sticking to the zone, and he's talking about Morton's upper body being ahead of his lower body, and that's why his sinker keeps flying through the zone opposite side of righty hitters. That's beautiful stuff that I have no idea.
Now you're backing off.
But it's the hitting that just stick to your strengths. Call the game.
You're basically saying they should have a pitcher there.
And
they
a hitter.
They should have a catcher and a hitter.
Which of
catchers
the,
are great? Of the Braves, so they had the big three, right? Like him, Maddox, Avery
Glavin.
Yeah, right.
Maddox, Glavin,
Smoltz. One of them was the really good hitter, though? Was it Glavin?
Wasn't that?
Or was it Avery? One of them was a really good hitter.
I'm going with Tommy Glavin because he was also drafted
hockey
by the
player.
LA Kings,
yeah,
right?
He was also a hockey player. One of them was a really good hitter. So
So you're saying get him in the broadcast booth with Joe and John?
We were talking through it, I was thinking to myself, was it Smoltz, actually? But I don't think it was. Okay. I think it was one of the other guys. It was a really good hitter.
Can you name the other player from that era, JR, that was a pitcher in MLB baseball that was also drafted in the National Hockey League?
So we're talking 80s, 90s?
Yeah, around the same time as Glavin. Glavin was drafted by the LA Kings, and their other fella, and I'll give it away next, is that he's actually Canadian, and he was drafted by the Winnipeg Jets.
Ryan Dempster?
Kirk McCaskill.
Kirk McCaskill? From Kapuskasing.
Exactly.
Or Temiskaming, one of those places in northern Ontario.
Yeah.
Okay.
Glavin hit over 200 in 9 of his 22 seasons. And, of course, he was a great sacrifice bunter as well.
Was Glavin the chicks dig the long ball?
Yes.
Remember the commercial?
Yeah, absolutely. That was great.
Yes.
When they're just cranking dingers and BP, chicks dig the long ball.
So
they got glasses on.
Thinking about color commentators on national broadcasts that you really like to listen to. I agree with you, Simmer. I really like Johnny Miller. Yeah. I thought at the end of his career, though, I thought he became more of Johnny Bitterman.
He was just maybe
sick of all the money the guys are making now or whatever. He's a bit bitter, but in his heyday, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
I think of John McEnroe in tennis. I really enjoy it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what's the common denominator? Now, that's individual sports, not team sports, but still, what's the common denominator? They told it like they see it, right? There was no, I'm a former player, and therefore I'm going to take it easy on these guys. You know, no, they told it like they saw it, and that made them a pleasure.
You can
to
have
watch.
Little.
So when I think about hockey, I mean, is there a color commentator, national broadcasts, right now where you go, absolutely, I feel like I learn something every time?
I'm not playing up to it, but I think Gary Galli does a great job, and Ray Ferraro. I would say those are two of the guys that, you know, go a little deeper into the information. I love a lot of the guys on the American broadcast because they're friends. But man, if you want to talk about your ability to cruise through an ice hockey match with all other than just relating what you've just watched on it,
right.
But I'd end up going with those two. From a basketball perspective, I'm trying to think of. I'm trying to think. JR, back when it was Marv Albert, they had the fella with the mustache there from Entertainment Tonight on the sideline.
Ahmad Rashad?
No, it was Ahmad Rashad, and then it was the other fella ran into some bit of issues there.
The fellow with the mustache from Entertainment.
O'Brien?
Pat O'Brien. Pat O'Brien. And I can't even remember who was doing all the color at the time from a basketball perspective. So those would be the ones. And football, especially NFL, I would say almost any of them. But the bar certainly set very high by Tony Romo. And then I'm trying to think of other sports. That would be the main ones. What about you?
I'd have to think about the football. I really, really liked Tony Romo when he came out, and I still really like him. I'm not quite as enamored as I was. It was just he brought something unique, a skill set of being able to, again, sort of predict the plays and say as they were. I find, and this is just my personal commentary on he and Jim Nantz now, that they've also almost become a little jokey now. Yeah. It's become a little bit of inside, a lot of giggly, and a lot less kind of straight up football. I don't listen. Anybody that listens to the show knows that we can go off topic and maybe get a little too giggly at times. I appreciate that. There is a time and a place for it. I think sometimes, I don't know, and this just occurred to me in the last year that I've watched them, feels like a couple of guys that feel bigger than the game sometimes.
Oh, okay, so, okay. Because I can never not hear Joe Buck and feel that way. And I think he's actually toned it down, but I've met him in the past, and there's nothing but arrogance that I feel in his voice anytime he's doing anything, no matter how natural he tries to act. So that would end up being mine.
He's got a vote, by the way, from Mike Johnson. Of course.
Johnny does, right? And then this is a problem. Hey, you go through it, I think. The person, I think, and I had met years ago and enlisted from an Ottawa perspective and got used to, but when Gord Miller first started, to me, Gord, I considered him to be more of a desk guy. Boy, I think over the years, he's really become, very enjoyable to listen to. And he is
that's play-by-play. I'm talking about color guys now.
Yeah, he's very knowledgeable guy. Yeah. And other sports, and I can't relate it to a soccer because I don't watch it enough, but any sport that you don't really have a feel for, when you have a former athlete doing it, whether it be race car or any type of tennis or any types of stuff like that, that to me is always nice, right? Because that really takes me inside of a sport that I really have no idea about.
Yeah. Soccer, you watch a lot of the, not so much now, I'll say the bigger games, but a lot of them are one comment, like it's just the play-by-play guy. There isn't a color guy in a lot of cases in soccer.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Now, maybe at the World Cup they might, but I think a lot of the Premiership games aren't necessarily. They just got the play-by-play guy straight up. That's all they need. Yeah, he provides all of it.
And I guess I'd also say, guys, watching it is that, I'm familiar enough with basketball, not that I pretend, and baseball I don't want, but from a football perspective, I would say that's where I enjoy it so much is that I'm very appreciative of, I don't really understand the sport that well, and for having somebody guide you through it for so many things that go on in a football game, no matter what I may think, I'm appreciative of it versus not having anything. Do you know what I mean? The information on any broadcast, any kind of pregame. The other guy to me, guys, that has a great future that I've been nothing but impressed with, first of all, that he's transitioned quickly onto TV, has actually darker and more hair than he had when he retired. I think Drew Brees is doing a real nice job as well.
Mm-hmm.
The flow there is actually, do you notice there's quite a bit more of it now?
I haven't looked that closely.
Yeah, it's a little darker, but he just feels like he's...
He's taking the call. He and Mike Tirico are going to take over Sunday Night Football next year.
Yeah, he feels like that's going to be a pretty natural transition.
All right, 6:45. Thoughts on that favorite color commentator? We're talking on a national scale now that you really like. Like you feel like you learned something about the game as you watch. Let us know. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. Keep that as a running thread throughout the show. We'll take a break right now at 6:45, and when we come back, we'll fill in the NHL story for you. A lot of late-night games last night, including the Habs in Seattle. Maybe getting out of Dodge would be the cure for Montreal after getting off to a very tough start. They played in Seattle last night against the Kraken. Expansion team. Of course, Montreal is going to right the ship. We'll come back, talk about that when we come back, right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200. All right, welcome back. 6:48 here on a Wednesday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer talking to favorite color commentators. Couple of votes. Chris Collinsworth's name has come up on text at 12-1200. Romo and Aikman need to put away the Dallas pom-poms. It comes from Unsigned this morning.
Oh, if there's anything with Romo, if you don't like Tom Brady, that would be more of an issue. And I know it's hard for him not to be, but I would say the love affair is much stronger with Tom than anything that I've seen with the Dallas Cowboys.
Jack writes, John Madden, state of the art. And when you think about guys who changed the way that color commentary went, absolutely, John Madden. John Madden was probably the first of all of them when you think about just all the unique Maddenisms that came up, but you always felt like you learned. And his strength was talking about the lines, right? The offensive and defensive lines, and you're watching football, you didn't just watch the skill position players. You watched the lines as things, first when the ball was initially snapped before your eyes maybe moved to the receivers or the running backs or something. So John Madden made you appreciate kind of the little nuances of football as well.
Yeah, and also the duos when you have Pat Summerall. And I also think in the same thing, to me, I think of Al Michaels on such a grand stage, JR, that I could just listen to him all day long. It's almost like growing up as a kid and listening to Dick Irvin or somebody. Like, to me, I just think he's so iconic, and I don't think he's changed any either, and he still calls a great game and very enjoyable. Just when I hear his voice, to me, it feels like this is a big event.
All right, Atlanta wins game one of the World Series 6-2 over Houston. Bunch of NHL games last night. A lot of them Canadian teams, some of them playing in the West, some at home, like Vancouver with their home opener. And Montreal heading, getting out of Dodge after a real tough start to the year, maybe getting out from under the spotlight in Montreal, going to the American West Coast. Kind of maybe take a deep breath, right the ship a little bit off to
Shea Weber's coming down to give him a big speech and explain how excited he is to not be playing hockey anymore and how much he loves retirement. Yeah. And that's basically the way they played.
1-5 start to the season. We're playing an expansion team. You know, they already played their first game, so we're feeling good about going into Seattle last night. Let's take you to about 60 seconds into the game.
Now Seattle, a 3-on-2 back in. Winberg dropping it off to Eberle. He shoots and scores! Jordan Eberle off the schneid, 1:02 into the opening period. It's a 1-0 Kraken lead.
Yes, 62 seconds into the game. Seattle had the joint jumping with a goal. Montreal would tie it on a Hoffman goal. Seattle would score late in the first to go up 2-1. And they would go on to a 5-1 victory over Montreal for the first ever home win in Kraken history. Of course, they'd lost to Vancouver in their home opener on Saturday. So for Montreal, yeah, you mentioned Shea Weber flew down and there was a lot of hoopla. I watched the first period of the game. They're talking about Oz. Shea went in, met the boys. Everybody's glad to see him. And then they go out and they, I watched the whole game. I, you know, sometimes I'll go by what I did watch and I'll go look at shots and I'll go, well, shots were 26-24. Score was 5-1. I'm not thinking Montreal dominated the game for sure. As they fall to 1-6 to begin the year.
Yeah, 10 I've already with 5 goals. And off the snide, that I'm assuming is a Seattle announcer. That's not Johnny Forslund, though, right? Must be
no,
a radio.
TV,
yeah, must be the radio call. So, yeah, nice for them. And from Montreal perspective, yeah, not good, Jared. And as you kind of look at a season like this, and, hey, I wouldn't want to be critical of young players struggling early because I think Timmy Stutzel's only got, what, 1 assist or no goals. Mm-hmm. Caulfield, certainly for what was built up, not a whole lot happening for him and just overall for the Habs. And I would say the biggest one, I didn't know him at all, and I'll say it's early, but when you look at Dvorak's numbers as well for what was supposed to come in, and they just fleeced everybody. They're smarter than everybody, and they're going to give up this first-round pick or a first-round pick after letting Kotkaniemi go. Not that he's lighting it up, but everybody I had talked to said Dvorak was a third-line center. But nope, Montreal's got him, $4.8 million. He just quite simply has not done anything so far after having a real nice preseason.
Here's Jeff Petrie on what ain't working for the Habs right now.
We're in the same position less than a week ago, and it's the same game we played in Buffalo, same game we played at home against the Sharks, and it doesn't work, and it's frustrating.
That sounds like a guy who already has come to the conclusion he doesn't have any answers. 7 games into an 82-game season. That's not good. That's not good. That
no.
Jeff Petrie's been around for a long time and already sounds very frustrated.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you kind of look at that. And also in just dealing with the media in Montreal, and you lose your captain and you start to look at him and probably what Gallagher are kind of the faces of it, or at least kind of the veteran voices here. And yeah, it does, you know, look at it from Montreal's side. I understand they have some talent. But I don't like the mix, and yeah, when you go through, and I'll also say with the way the season started with Carey Price, but if you were to say, what would be the comparison here in Ottawa? Well, let's not even go now. Let's go, say, 5 or 6 years ago. Like, a Danault, Weber, and Price out of your lineup, Jer, isn't just that they were good players. You know, it's like taking, a huge part of your leadership core, right, and taking it right out. Like, I don't know if Danault would be Pageau. On the back end, is Weber compared to Carlson? Certainly in goal, Craig Anderson. Like, you take out major components, and not just about the talent. It's about the glue and the leadership. and all the other stuff where, like I say, it just feels like a completely different hockey team than we saw in the playoffs last year.
The wise man once said, it's getting late early
in Montreal.
Yeah,
and you know, again,
thank you.
As to what's going to happen, you have the whole Bergevin situation. Then you kind of wonder from a Toronto perspective, they got a game against the collapsing Chicago Blackhawks that, first of all, couldn't come at a better time. But also from a Toronto perspective, I can't think of a more of a must win. They don't have any of their players. They have no manager. The coach has quit. If you can't win that one, then you're in some serious trouble. And feels like with Montreal, yeah, this could get away from them very quickly.
Doesn't it sound like that Petrie's pointing the finger at the coaching staff when he says we played the same way against Buffalo, we played the same way against San Jose, and it's not working? And we're not changing.
I think he's also pointing to, Hammer, and just my perception is that when you go from the way they played in the playoffs, and this is where it's the parallels, guys, from 2017 here, where everybody bought into a very passive defensive system that nobody liked to watch. But as you said, Jer, what was it, believe in the system or whatever back in the day under Guy Boucher? What was the whole terminology when everyone was chanting all the time? Remember that?
Well, rest is a weapon. Was
no, but it was also follow the system or believe in it. But my point is last year they had
Trust the system.
They had a group on the back end that were big and hard to play against. Take out Weber, put Savard in, but you've now went back the other way as well. Deneau is a guy that plays properly. Tatar was a good pro. What do? Well, you bring in Dvorak for Kotkaniemi. I mean, not a big deal. Entered into the party guys like Mike Hoffman that have never played properly. Enter in a lot of guys now that are on the smallish side that love to score. And again, you're not feeling that same team vibe that they had last year when they went to the Stanley Cup final.
All right, so Montreal falls 5-1 in Seattle. Vancouver lost its home opener. Started the season with a 6-game road trip, went home, lost 5-1 to Minnesota. 3-2 to Minnesota. Minnesota is 5-1 to begin the year. So the Wild are off to a good start. Finish of the night was probably in Anaheim. Normally wouldn't speak a lot about an Anaheim game. They played Winnipeg, though, Canadian team. The Jets are down 3-2 late. In fact, they pull the goalie with about 90 seconds to go. Nikolaj Ehlers scores off a faceoff to tie the game at 3 with just over a minute to go. Nikolaj Ehlers remains on the ice for the next faceoff.
Kopp wins the draw. Pionk far side now, and a shot. They score! Nikolaj Ehlers squeezed off his shot, and how about that turn of events? The Winnipeg Jets have scored 2 quickies and lead it 4-3.
There's our friend, the laughing commentator from Winnipeg. 2 goals in 19 seconds in the final 90 seconds of the game, and the Jets turn defeat into victory 4-3 over the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, nice win for Winnipeg. We like their team, JR, and been a bit of a slow start, but you start to see Ehlers and Connors, and hey, they've had to face a little bit of injury and probably a little bit of question about their general manager, but still 3-2-1.
And we'll get into the discussion of Stan Bowman because that deserves its a full review. We'll do that after 7 o'clock because that's a very disturbing story in which we saw the full breadth of it yesterday, so we'll get into that. One other Canadian team played last night. Calgary has won 4 games in a row. They got out to a 4-0 lead and beat New Jersey by a score of 5-3. Can tell you that the Lightning won their first game in regulation. Speaking of somewhat slow starts, they went into Pittsburgh and beat the Penguins 5-1 last night. Word is Sidney Crosby could be back in the Penguins lineup as soon as their game tomorrow. So there you go. There's the wrap-up to the NHL story. We'll fill in all the scores coming up during our top-of-the-hour update, which will follow the latest news from 580 CFRA. All right, still to come. We've got our $1,000 minute coming up just before 8 o'clock. We'll have our King of the Grills contest. We should do that. Maybe we'll do that sometime next hour as well. All right, so your chance to qualify for that beautiful Traeger grill, so we'll do that. We've got Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey insider. He's actually getting on a bird to go watch the Habs play out in Cali later on this week. Dave will join us before he gets on the plane. That happens just after 8. Jack Miller, voice of the Belleville Senators, joins us after 9 o'clock this morning. We got a B-Sens game for you tonight, taking on the Rochester Americans. So we'll have all of that. And when we come back, though, a discussion on the Stan Bowman story, very disturbing story, which came to light yesterday, or at least more of the details that did. And it is not a good look for a lot of people, including some people still involved in the game in other organizations. We'll get into all of that when we come back here on this Wednesday morning. We're glad you're with us on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.